originally we said we were going to do JavaScript today. Now it seemed to me that you were diligently learning all these new languages, or many of you new language Java, and now was not the time to start yet another language, namely JavaScript, especially as your homework this week is Java. So I decided that we would postpone the JavaScript lectures by 1 or 2 days, depending on how things go. And what I'll do instead is give you a talk which explains how Java can be used in various applications. So this is a talk on the applications of Java. So this will not teach you any nifty new languages, because you're meant to be diligently absorbing the last set. All right. So this particular talk, which you should, has everybody got one of these handouts? All right. So this particular talk, which the handouts are available over there, does not cover all possible applications of Java. Rather, it focuses on two areas of particular relevance, at MPAC or at universities, namely, one application is for a general language for coding scientific and engineering applications. That's what CSE is meant to stand for, Computational Science and Engineering. And there is also some remarks at the end, which I won't cover in great detail, on the applications to education. All right, so one area that we will address, which is of general importance, is why Java has a lot of advantages over other languages, namely why it sort of seems to be a good compromise between C++ and Fortran, in that it has some of the advantages of both languages and some disadvantages which these other two languages have. All right, so this particular file, which you don't actually have, is a link that you'll find when this goes up on the web, you'll see this as a link. So this is a reasonably useful link which is available through the MPAC homepage as well as here, which is a collection of web resources describing the use of Java in scientific and engineering computation. So in particular, we had a conference in Syracuse, and these are the proceedings of this conference, and you'll see here a whole bunch of articles which people wrote on the use of Java in science and engineering, many of these actually from Syracuse. Probably shouldn't have clicked that one. This shows the interest in the field. We had a conference in December. ACM is now organizing a similar conference in June, focusing on the same area, just following up on that field. So that's clearly a lot of interest in that. All right, so this particular foil is actually one I've used in different forms many times. So this is the computing pyramid, although this is a computing triangle, and you will see computing cones in other parts of my foils. So the idea of a computing pyramid is that if you look at computers, the There's a huge number of very cheap computers, which are typified by PCs, or if you want to be exotic, by video game controllers and personal digital assistants and digital set-top boxes. And at the top of the pyramid, you have so-called supercomputers, which are the very large-scale machines, such as the large IBM SP2 at Cornell and similar machines at Pittsburgh and Illinois and San Diego, plus a bunch of other. I mean, there are some 200 so-called supercomputers around the world, typically from Cray, IBM, and Silicon Graphics. Now, so at the bottom you have a lot of not very powerful computers, and at the top you have a few powerful computers. Some useful numbers are that if you look at the how many dollars are going into the various fields, you will find that about 100 times as much money is spent on PCs and stuff like that as is spent on supercomputers. I mean, the computer industry is about $100 billion, plus or minus a factor of two, and the supercomputer industry is $1 billion, plus or minus a factor of two. The other number that's worth bearing in mind, which is that if you look at the total compute power of all these little computers, it's about 1,000 times the compute power of the world's fastest supercomputer. So this is quite important for understanding why Java is important, because Java, if you like, is the computing language of the bottom of the pyramid. It's the language which has been designed to support the machines at the bottom. So one of the fundamental reasons why the web and Java is very important is that it is supporting this huge number of machines, and it is supported by a computer industry which has enormous size. And because it has enormous size, the cost of a piece of software is much cheaper for a PC than it is for a supercomputer. That's if they have the same functionality. It's also relatively clear that if the number of sales in a field is 100, the sales in another field, you can afford to hire more people in the low end than you can at the high end. So at the end of this class, you'll all be very well prepared to have a job in this very large computer industry at the bottom. Even if you were prepared to have a job in the top end, there aren't quite as many jobs because the field is 100 times smaller. This particular foil, when you go to the web, has a link attached to it, which is a reasonably up-to-date article I just wrote about a month ago, which summarizes this situation. It's in HTML, so you can browse it, and you will find a link to it when you go to the website for these foils. This actually projects this whole scenario through to the year 2007, because in the year 2007, the top supercomputers will have performances around a so-called petaop or petaflop. A flop is a floating point operation, an op is an operation. Peta means 10 to the 15th, so that's 10 to the 15th operations per second. If you think ahead to the year 2007 and sum up all the PCs around the world, then you can easily convince yourself that the total power of that inverted commas computer is 10 to the 18th operations per second. Now, that doesn't say that you should ignore these machines going at 10 to the 15th operations, because they're closely coordinated. and work on the same problem. And if these machines at the bottom are busily delivering digital video to everybody's homes, that may not be a very useful application which generates a great value from them working together. But there is it's meant to illustrate the huge potential that is possible just because of the power of all these machines. Because as I think I mentioned in the first lecture, every consumer device is effectively having the same chip technology in it. Workstations and PCs are consolidating in their technology. PCs and video games are consolidating. SGI is making the microprocessors used in Nintendo's video game controller, and so on. So everything is the same technology. The only difference is, in a high-end computer, you package a lot of them together. In the very smallest system, which is currently a video game system, probably is the smallest real system, you have a single scaled-down chip. So this particular foil here essentially makes this point, namely it actually focuses on so-called MPP software, which is the top of the pyramid. But if you go halfway down the pyramid, when you find mainframes and corporate information systems, what this says is that the web software has to be the cheapest solution because it has the largest market. This particular foil was aimed at the parallel computing community, which is the area that MPAC works on when it is not working in web technology. And one of the very important reasons why the web is important, you see, these arguments were always true. Namely, if I'd made these arguments 5 years ago, I would have said PC software is the world's cheapest software. In fact, that's what Bill Gates would have said. Now, the trouble about PC software is PC software doesn't extrapolate very well because a single PC is not the same as a mainframe. However, as all powerful computers are all now built from the same technology, and the way you get a more powerful computer is by building it in parallel with lots of PC chips, the web is relevant because the web is a distributed computing technology. It is a technology that is not the software for a single machine. It is the software for a network collection of machines. And that effectively is a general computer. So the difference today is not just that the web is a wonderful thing, but the web computing model is the general computing model. Therefore, you can use web software effectively to tackle an arbitrary problem, whereas the PC software was very interesting and very productive, but it was only aimed at PCs, and PCs could not be properly extrapolated to other machines. But I believe web software can be extrapolated to other machines because the web is a general linked collection of computers. So here we have a computing cone, and this arrow, which appears on various of my diagrams, is meant to point out that whenever we're building any software, this argument tells us to start at the bottom and project up. You start with the software of the web. If you go halfway up this cone, you build corporate intranet out of that software model. If you go to the end, you build massively parallel computers, the software for them out of this technology. This is a foil I've used many times. So this describes the basic mechanism for web technology. So at the top, You start with the world wide, and that's the so-called internet, which is implementing the web worldwide. You start with the world as the consumer, and that gives you, by definition, the world's best software because it has the biggest market. And that's just a law of economics, that if you have the largest market, you can, of course, make cheaper software, but as you have such a big market, you can also make better software because you can hire more people to work on it. So this is sort of the origin of this generates browsers and servers, or navigators and servers. Then it is, of course, true that if you look at particular applications such as banking or military applications, they would require special enhancements like security, so you add those in. And then this gives you your base software system, and then you apply it in various applications. And in applying it in various applications, you do two things. The original model was general software for general networks. When you apply it to a particular application, you choose a specific network. That gives you a so-called intranet. An intranet is just a restricted network servicing a particular geographical domain. And so a good example, this particular foil is discussing medical applications. And so a hospital and the associated doctors and clinics might have a particular high-speed secure network linking them together. So you take the software which was designed for the worldwide net and you apply it on that Pacific net. So that has some important advantages because the Pacific net can be faster and also more secure than the worldwide net. But still you want to take the software from the worldwide because it's better. And then of course you also customize the software. So your database search, so if you go to the web today and you type search, you have all these wonderful things, Yahoo and Lycos and AltaVista and Excite and what have you, your web search technology. You then change that web search technology instead of to search the world, you now change it to a very highly customized search of a patient record database or whatever is deemed to be important for this application. When you do a corporate enterprise information system, it searches the database describing the corporation. So we do two things when we use web technology, in particular Java. We restrict the hardware, and we customize the software. And so that means that we shouldn't be worried too much. The issues of security and issues of performance, which are present on the internet, may not be relevant on our specific application. If we have a high-speed, customized ATM network internal to our organization, doesn't matter. That can have much higher performance than a bunch of phone lines or whatever the typical user on the World Wide Web has. So when you're looking at web technology, you should bear in mind your application area because it may have different characteristics from the application which is the World Wide Web. So now I make some, this is actually a few general remarks. So why will Java replace many languages? Well, it will replace many languages for a combination of social and technical reasons. So the technical reason really two-part. I've described one technical reason, which is that it's used pervasively on the web, which means it has this huge capital investment in it. The other technical reason, which we'll explore later on, is that it actually is a pretty good language. Namely, it is a language which appears to have a good trade-off between performance and functionality, so that you seem to be able to get a lot of the functionality of traditional languages without significant performance losses. The one language which I think it is relatively clear that they can replace is Fortran, because it appears that you can build Java compilers. You can't today, but you will very soon be able to build Java compilers, as we'll discuss, which are the same performance as Fortran compilers. And there is little doubt that it is a more powerful language than Fortran. Something which is a little less clear is whether it will replace C++. The reason for that is that C++ is a more powerful language, if you like, than Java, because Java does not have pointers, C++ does. C++ has extensive overloading capability that Java doesn't. So many people view those as big advantages of Java, because this is what allows you to actually build high-performance compilers and also to build safer software. However, it certainly reduces the functionality of Java. So I would say that it's not known whether Java replaces C++. I mean, one reason to think it might, even though it doesn't have this functionality, is that it appears likely that future applications are going to have to be, if you like, web-aware. They're going to have to run on the web. And if they're going to have to run on the web, they'll probably be naturally written, at least partly, in Java. And so there'd have to be a very compelling reason to go into C++. Today, that compelling reason exists because C++ is not only more powerful, it is higher performance today. If you write a C++ application, it will run a great deal faster than your Java application. But that will not be true in the future. In the future, your Java application will run faster than your C++ application. I think there's no doubt that's true. All right, so if you focus on this next section, we're discussing how to use Java, you know, what is the role of Java as a computing language. I isolated three types of use of Java as a computing language. One is to build user interfaces. The second is to build what I call coarse-grained software integration, which is linking globally units of computation together. And the second and the final use of Java as a computing language is to actually do the nitty-gritty of the inner kernels or essentially your basic code. So these are sort of the three types of uses of Java. And now we'll describe those separately. I guess this particular foil here is meant to illustrate these roles. So here we have the user staring at his orange client. So there he has a user interface. The purpose of this diagram is to emphasize that the software for user interfaces runs on client computers, not on server computers. That's what a user interface is. So that's likely to be a low-end machine, almost by definition. So it's going to be a PC or a workstation. Then I had a bunch of components of the application: rendering, control, database, and detailed computation. And so the linkage of those four components is an example of the using Java to link components together. That is probably the least controversial use of Java. User interfaces is uncontroversial. Linking components together is pretty uncontroversial, because that's a very natural web type of thing to do, because in the web already you have a bunch of independent servers, and the web tends to link those servers together. And then the most controversial is to take a particular unit of that computation and then use Java as the language to implement, you know, your favorite computational fluid dynamics or your favorite geographical information system or whatever your particular simulation or computation is. But I believe there's reasons you will expect Java to be used in all three of those cases. So I've already mentioned Web Windows, and the reason I put Web Windows here is that if you look at Java as a user interface, the reason, if you like, why Java is the natural user interface language is the Web Windows philosophy, namely, the software will be built to the interface defined by web browsers and clients. And so if you believe that, then the computing language which you're going to use to build to those interfaces is going to be Java by definition, essentially, because it is the computing language for the web. So I probably can make a parenthesis here. You're learning Java because it is the dominant language of the web. There are various people like Microsoft or AT&T who would prefer that you use a different solution. And it is possible that such a different solution will become popular and replace Java. If that happens, it will have to be, I think, better than Java. So any remarks I make about Java will be valid for the replacement, because the replacement will still be the language of the web, which is the largest market, because there is no way you can replace this technology unless it is the technology of the web. And in spite of Bill Gates' enormous power over everybody, I do not believe that he can force a technically inferior product on us. In fact, I think his products have to be significantly better before people will accept them, because Microsoft has such a negative image as being a giant bully. I believe Microsoft's power is actually negative in this respect. But that positive for them is they have more people than anybody else by at least a factor of 10, so it's quite likely they'll invent some pretty good technology. All right, so that's the end of the parenthesis, which says that when I say Java, I mean the language of the web, which is currently Java. Many people expect it to remain Java because Java was very well designed. It is not a fad, as far as I can see. I have not found anybody perceptive, I think, who would claim Java is a bad technology forced on us by Sun. It is forced on us by Sun, but it is good technology. And so the reason for its success is that it was excellently designed, and it had these positive features about it in terms of its application domain. All right, so I think there is little doubt that, as it says here, and I've already mentioned this, that Web Windows will be the operating system of the future. It may not be called Web Windows, but effectively it is Web Windows. And in fact, all the projects you're doing are effectively Web Windows projects. So when you build a JDBC database, you're using the web client / server interface for databases, as opposed to the BMS or the PC or the Macintosh interface. This foil here just makes the obvious remark that Web Windows is both the operating system of all the web, but also it is the operating system of a single PC, or a single Macintosh, or a single video game controller, because you can run a web server and a web client on a single machine, and that is all you need to have Web Windows. So whether it's distributed, clients talking to servers not on a different machine, whether it's a single standalone PC, in your study, it's still a universal operating system. So Web Windows is the operating system from one machine to the hundreds of millions of machines which are on the internet. And of course, that's why it's so powerful. And why, say, Apple and BIOS stand no chance in their plan to try to develop a better operating system, because nobody will care. Because people will write to Web Windows. They will not care whether it is Apple or Windows NT underneath it, what most people will just ignore the operating system, or at least the nifty features of the operating system. All right. So now we'll focus a little more on user interfaces. And so actually the next set here are a set of examples. The first example actually isn't Java, though it ought to be. It's actually written with the CGI mechanism. It's only here because it's a good example. It's actually a very good example of web windows, because it's an example of a web interface to a particular set of applications. In this case here, it's an application to computational biology. So in principle, if you're interested and you click on the so-called add-on button, then you can find it. You see, we will find... since I made the screen dump, they changed the interface. They got the version, whatever it is, 1.5 or something. And so it's now called the Biology Workbench. If you explore this, you will find that what they've built is a web interface to a huge amount number of biology databases and biology applications. So this is a typical application of using web technology as a shell to allow you to conveniently access a bunch of resources. So that was built at NCSA, which is where that link went to. This application here was built by my graduate student, Kuvang Dinsa. It's quite an interesting one. This is Java, and if you look at this application, you will find that this is a bunch of interfaces to a particular form of data, in this case performance data. And so if you go to you choose a particular one of them, and then you click here. So this is meant to be the This is a collection of data which is being displayed here. So this is a Java visualization applet, which is a good example of how I believe scientific computing will be done. You will have a suite of a toolkit of applets which are customized for your particular application here. We're visualizing what happens on 16 processors, which are busy as the computation proceeds. And this particular interface he has some huge number of possibilities. And one danger we're going to have showing all these examples is that usually Netscape crashes if it gets tarred after too many Java applets and crashes. So let's hope it doesn't get tarred. So anyway, this screen dump shows a couple of other visualization applets. So I believe whatever your field, if you're a stockbroker making decisions on how to do your investments, you'll just have all your data will sit on your server. You'll have these Java visualization applets which will visualize the consequences of various possible decisions. And on the client side, which is what Java will implement, you'll be able to make small choices about reformatting your output, choosing which particular visualization to look at, and so on. So as far as I can see, Java is clearly superior to all previous languages as a way to build such applications. Certainly Fortran was lousy at building such applications, and C and C++ were not terribly easy. I mean, you'd have to use a bunch of libraries before you could build that powerful visualization. Whereas, if you diligently follow Nancy's instructions and do your homeworks and keep studying, this type of visualization is essentially involves very straightforward built-in capabilities of the language. The language is clearly excellent at any directly any two-dimensional graphics such as this. So this is another one of my graduate students who actually got a job at Argonne National Lab, Gregor Lesvetsky. And this is actually related to a project that's ongoing in here called VDCE, where Gregor built an interface for distributed computing, which allowed you to map software onto computers and control the execution of a distributed computing environment. So you'll see here a typical Java graphical editor, where again you can link nodes together and form a computational graph in a very convenient fashion. All right, well, everybody knows how marvelous the CPS 615 virtual programming lab is, so we won't discuss that. All right. So that was a very brief description of a few examples of Java as a user interface. And that's a good so if you think about any user, whether they be a computational fluid dynamicist or somebody who's a manager of a company who's more interested in database processing, almost all their effort is going to be sitting looking at their user interface. And they're either going to have two choices. Either most of them will do nothing. They'll just press buttons on their user interface. The next level down is they might program their user interface, because that will be they might try to customize it. And then the most sophisticated thing they'll do is to change the actual simulation or server program. So, and that's what you'll see today on the web. If you go to people's homes, the most people are writing their own Java applets to customize front ends. That is the sort of, people either just access web pages, the next group of people build applets which animate their own web pages or other people's web pages, and then a much smaller number actually build large-scale server programs. And so that again illustrates something which I said on one of my foils. We're going to train a community of people for whom Java, which the most people Java will be the language they know, and they will never have heard of Fortran or C or C++, because the language they will have used, the only two languages they will use today is Java and JavaScript. They will have heard of Perl as a CGI scripting program, but most people will not find it easy to do that because they'll have to own their own server, and most people do not have that access. So the thing they'll find the easiest to do is Java. And so we're going to generate a community of people for whom Java is the language. And that's going to make it extremely hard for other languages to sort of survive, because they'll just be, everybody will know Java. And because Java is a good language, if it was insufficient or inadequate, you would learn other languages. But the claim of this foil set is the Fortran and C++ are either inferior to Java or different in a way that isn't clearly important. And therefore, Java is going to overwhelm them. Okay. So I'm not going to spend any significant time, I think, on this. I'm not even going to discuss this foil, which is incomprehensible. This is an ongoing project within MPAC led by Wojtek Fomansky and Salim Hariri. And if you go to these foils, you will find links to their work, including this is a foil from a much larger presentation put together by Wojtek Fomansky. So I did want to show you this one. So this comes from the, I think it's the Hochwald site. And so this is a popular article called Suck My Nips on the use of Java as a distributed computing technology. If we actually try to find this site. We have to go to its archive. So this was the article of Tuesday, January 7th. And so here's an article which essentially discusses Java as a technology for implemented large-scale computation. And if you go down here, this applet is diligently calculating pi. And so the idea is that with this technology, you see, if you have a, if you want to get, you know, if you have, if you're a student, you need have a, you have a difficult computational job to do, you write this nifty article or something. You find something very attractive, then you put, then you build into that article an applet, which is downloaded by the reader of your article. The applet diligently computes in the background and sends this result back to you. And then in this way, you can grab compute power automatically. So this shows a new model for computing where the, you know, if you cared about the value of pi and you found that the application they described as ray tracing, which is an example where you can break it up into independent parts, then in principle you could send the computation of each pixel to a different client while the reader was reading the article. That particular, a few pixels were calculated on that client computer, sent back to the server, and then you would be able to build dynamically your own supercomputer using the power of advertising to link computers together, which is a rather different principle from the previous principles of computing. So I see that as a reasonably amusing concept, which illustrates rather clearly that the web technology is a very, in principle, a powerful technology, because I imagine, I don't know how many people read that article, maybe tens of thousands. So if we were doing something significant other than calculating pi, in principle, we could have gotten a lot of computation, the author could, from this article. So, all right. And if you go to the... that resource I mentioned at the beginning, Java for Computational Science and Engineering, you'll find, and you go to those articles I mentioned, you'll find several articles discussed in a somewhat less graphic fashion and a more scientific fashion how to harness the power of a set of clients in some controlled or automatic fashion using Java in this fashion, by having it automatically download. So here, if you like, what we're doing, we're using the power of Java's portable software model, that we can write a single applet. That applet can then be downloaded, and this is a far more powerful software distribution model than we've ever had before. And it can either be done in a controlled fashion, or as you see here, in an uncontrolled fashion. If you started that article, you didn't realize there was an applet at the bottom of the page until you got to the end of the article. So your poor old CPU was being gobbled up unbeknownst to you. That you could, of course, view as a security problem. This is a screen dump, so that's why the pi doesn't change there. So this is captured at a particular time. But we show from the animation that it really does work. Alright, so that's the end of a discussion of Java for what you could say are the obvious applications. Java is the distributed computing coarse-grained integration technology. Java's user interface. The final application of Java is as the core programming language. And there are really two types of core programming techniques. One is the system software area, whereas C++ is the conventional language. And the second is scientific computing, where Fortran is the dominant language. These particular foils tackle Fortran. I've already essentially mentioned the C++ issue, and I would view, my guess is that Java stands a very good chance of replacing C++, but as I mentioned, there are some reasons why C++ has advantages, because it does have higher functionality at greater complexity. Alright, so I've already mentioned the critical reason why you would expect Java to replace Fortran. The reason is that it has better software engineering because it's object-oriented and better graphics capabilities. I used to spend most of my time writing Fortran programs. When you wrote Fortran programs at least 20 years ago, most of the code was the main routine, doing I/O and generally manipulating data. Rather little of the code was actually doing the computation. And there is obvious that that Java can replace all that data manipulation. Not quite so obvious that Java can replace the core computation. A few of you were in my class CPS 615 last semester, where we taught Fortran 90. Maybe I'm biased, but I would view Java as a clearly more elegant language than Fortran 90, and it is certainly far more popular than Fortran 90. And that's relevant because the only chance that Fortran has of being object-oriented is to adopt Fortran 90, because Fortran 77, the predecessor of Fortran 90, is not object-oriented. People ask me about the future of Fortran, I would expect Fortran 77 to remain about as popular as it used to be, because there's still lots of people who use it. I think an important impact of Java is that it will tend to stop the adoption of Fortran 90, because people wanting Fortran 90's object-oriented features, I think, will move to Java. We're now moving to C++, but I think in the future we'll move to Java as having a superior capabilities and a more elegant object framework. This file also points out some timing issues. If you subtract 77 from 90, which says that Fortran 77 was adopted in 1977, Fortran 90 was adopted in 1990, that's 13 years, so it took somewhat over 10 years to develop Fortran 90. Java, if you like, has become almost an accepted dominant language in a period of essentially, the real Java came out essentially a year ago. So if you look at the adoption curve, it's much faster for Java than it is for Fortran. And there's also a comment there on the performance of Fortran 90. We have a project called the Black Hole Simulation, where we wrote the code in Fortran 90. But then we wish to run it on the so-called Cray C90, which is a large-scale supercomputer. To get good performance, we had to rewrite the Fortran 90 and Fortran 77. The reason was the Fortran 90 compiler on the Cray machine was not good enough yet, even in 1996, when the language, 1996-90, is six years after the adoption of the language. And that comes back to this pyramid effect. The Cray C90 is a supercomputer, top of the pyramid. only got $1 billion worth of total sales in that whole area. And so that's, if you like, is where the Fortran 90 potential market is a bit bigger in general for that, because it has other scientific computers. But the reason why Java is going to get you good compilers a lot faster than Fortran 90 is just this consumer market issue. There's 100 times the dollars in the Java world than there is in the Fortran 90, there is in the supercomputer world. Therefore, poor old Cray is bound to take a lot longer to develop a good Fortran 90 compiler than Sun and Symantec and Microsoft will take to develop a good Java compiler. So, there, of course, are not very good Java compilers yet, but I'm sure there'll be good Java compilers before there are uniformly good Fortran 90 compilers, just because of this huge dollar investment factor. This particular file is actually probably a little too detailed. We don't need to go through it in much detail. One issue for large-scale computing is parallelism. And what this file states is that if you look at the classes of applications that need parallelism, you can classify them into four areas, which areas aren't terribly important for this lecture. You will find of those four areas, Fortran supports parallelism naturally in none of them. Java supports parallelism in three of them, namely, which are all the coarse grain type areas. And and there's the one area where neither supports parallelism is so-called data parallelism, which is actually the most important. But Fortran has to be extended in to get data parallelism, either by using message passing or by using so-called data parallel constructs. But, and so Java needs to be extended in the same fashion, but Fortran had to be extended anyway. So I would claim that when you look at parallelism, Java is either equal to Fortran or better, because through the thread mechanism, the applet mechanism, and the object mechanism, it already has a lot of parallelism built in, which parallelism is not in Fortran at all. So this particular foil here essentially makes that point. One thing, again, if you think about parallel computing, actually most parallel computing is done with so-called message passing, systems called PVM and MPI. Java doesn't actually implement that very efficiently at the moment, but it does implement message passing quite easily, because you learned last time from Nancy that the Java has built into it the ability to set up socket connections and to link things across the web. And in fact, at the end of these foils is a discussion of our work on Java collaboration systems, which are precisely implemented by using message passing in Java to link clients and servers, and in that way link arbitrary number of clients together. So Java certainly is more natural for message passing. It is not yet more efficient. So this comes back to our comments about internet versus intranet and customizing software. If you look at this huge consumer industry, the huge consumer industry is going to make trade-offs, assuming today that the dominant user has a 28.8 kilobaud modem. So they're probably not going to do a great deal to optimize message passing performance, because you're going to be limited by both the internet and the 28 and the actual modem connection. So an area of performance is going to have to come as an extension of the technology. So I assume that you have this base web technology and base Java runtime. It is quite likely that if you wish to do a high performance implementation, that's not just for scientific computing, you'll probably need that for your corporate intranet, because that will have a higher speed network. you'll probably go in there and replace the Java runtime appropriate parts of it by a higher performance implementation. So once the only trouble is that as the web is changing so rapidly, it's probably not the best time to do such performance optimization. So I'm assuming that once the web stabilizes, there's going to be a lot of activity called customized Java or customized web technology by looking at the built-in security, looking at the built-in performance, and improve it. Because there's nothing intrinsic to the language or the technology which makes it slow. However, the application that it's being built for is intrinsically slow because of the nature of today's web. And so when people make trade-offs, there's always a trade-off between functionality and performance. And reliability, functionality, performance, and probably a few other things like that, you'd make trade-offs when you design your software. The web is designed for total flexibility. I mean, web software, probably not for reliability. Probably it's designed for very great ease of use because the general user is not going to be very knowledgeable. And performance, well, the performance is going to be maximizing the performance on your very slow speed line, but it will not worry too much about latency or startup time because the bandwidth is so slow, the intrinsic bandwidth. So I'll make a set of choices which will not be the right choices for many other applications. So one problem with using the web for many applications today is you do not have these different customizations. And there probably is little point in you customizing it, because if you went in there and customized Java version 1.0 runtime, Java will come up with version 1, some will come up with version 1.1 and 1.2 or 2.0 and render your work invalid because they'll have changed everything. So while the technology is changing rapidly, it makes it very difficult to optimize. So I believe that at the moment, the best thing to do is to live with the technology as it is, understand that you can optimize it, and just await events and do what you can with today's technology. So this foil here is there's one important word which is a useful computer science word called wrapper, because if you think about what I described with Java as a user interface, essentially what I described was Java as a technology that you put around being at the user, then could access anything. So that says that Java is extremely interesting language for building so-called wrappers. Wrappers are a technology which allow you to insulate some customized, difficult-to-use application and give it a more friendly, interoperable link. So you will find a lot of so-called legacy applications, existing applications and existing systems that will be linked with other existing systems using web technology, in particular Java. The best example of that today is databases, which I've already mentioned. The importance of things like the Java database connection is it takes archaic legacy technology, relational databases, or rather clumsy interfaces, and puts this very flexible front end to it, which makes it far more usable. So suddenly you take an arcane technology, put a Java wrapper on it, and then it becomes a very generally usable technology. So that's Java, of course, as a user interface again. So that's where the wrapper is. So this is our visualization app that we already illustrated. One technical point that we don't need to go into for this course, but is a trickiness in implementation because of these various, there's both technical reasons and sort of rather boring security reasons why it's a lot easier to build applications which link to servers than link to clients, because clients, as Nancy mentioned last time, have a lot of security restrictions, because you have applets there which have lots of restrictions on them. So when you think about building your Java system, the easiest thing to do is to link to the servers, because the servers do not have any security restrictions on them. So those are true applications which do not have, they have no need for a security restriction. So when you look at, my intuition is that that will change. People will learn how to build more flexible software where the security is not so intrinsically built in, so that you will not have this trade-off between servers and clients. Another possibility, actually, is that the difference between servers and clients could disappear. Namely, I would claim that the natural implementation of the web is not a client-server application, which is what you have today, but it's a server-server application. Because if you think about web windows, the natural thing is to have a server and a client, because together you get all the capabilities you need, and it is not natural particularly to have a server sitting off in left field and just a bunch of clients, just a bunch of browsers on your client computer. So this particular file, which I'll skip over, describes work done by Michael Chang on essentially Java plus message passing to do parallel computing. If you press the so-called add-on button, you will actually go to a more detailed description of that. So the next file or so links you to a discussion of the performance of Java. So this file is reasonably important. I may have already described that in the first lecture. So the way we've the way you've learned to do, well, actually you have learned to do, well, the way you've learned to do Java at the moment as the dominant form is the applet model, where you hand Java to the Java compiler. That's a .java file. It makes a .class file. That .class file is downloaded to your client, and then it's interpreted on the client. And so you have universal, that produces a so-called Java virtual machine. A Java virtual machine is these universal bytecodes, and those are the universal machine code interpreted by your Java interpreter for each machine. So when we're discussing Java for software engineering or Java for scientific computing, we're thinking of the second model, where we just build an ordinary compiler. I mean, when you buy a Fortran compiler, you buy a separate Fortran compiler for each computer, and it takes the Fortran code and produces machine language for that particular computer. And so there is no, Java can be run in two ways. You can either do it in two steps, go to the virtual machine, then the virtual machine gets interpreted. That's the applet model. Or you can just run so-called native compilers. And there is no universally good way of doing it. The applet model is in many ways very attractive, because it's a universal way of distributing software. But it has a price. It's much slower than, it's significantly slower than native code, because it's doing it in two steps. Plus, the last step is done in interpreted mode, namely it's being done as it, I mean, the virtual machine is being turned into machine code at the same time as the applet is running. So we can only get good performance for Java if we allow both models. And so we're going to assume that both models are going to be used. And when you build your Java client, when Netscape builds a browser out of Java, or when Netscape or a server out of Java, at least the base capabilities of of that software will be done with a real compiler, because that's the way you'll get performance. Right, so this is an interesting site. So if you go to the button here, which will hopefully contact this site. So this is the so-called LINPACK benchmark site. So LINPACK is just a solution of matrix equations. It's just solving AX equals B. And Jack Gangara, who built this site, first did this for, the original goal was actually to do every computer using Fortran. So he built it, he produced a Java version. And the nice thing about the Java version here is if you look at either your file, which you may not be able to see or hear, these are meant to be the performances of various machines. Now, although you can't read it, the fastest machine here on LINPACK has a performance of, I think, about 44 million floating point operations per second. So if we click here, we will find the performance of this wonderful machine, which is this relatively high-end silicon graphics, and we will see that our marvelous silicon graphics, which you all are dying to get, has a performance which we can't read, which is, I think, is 0.8 megaflops. So that already illustrates rather nicely the power of the consumer market. The Java interpreters for PCs are about a factor of 50 faster than the Java interpreters for the far more expensive silicon graphics workstations. And the reason is very straightforward. The Java interpreters for PCs are using the so-called just-in-time compilation technology, which is sort of obvious technology. You take your virtual machine, which is the thing you're interpreting, you're reading it, and you do the compilation, but you save the compilation, because you know that if you're, well, in this case here, we're solving linear equations, you keep reusing the code because you're doing it as a loop, which is, I think, run 100 times in this example here. So once you do it once, you can save it and then reuse it 99 times for each further iteration of the matrix solution. So just-in-time compilation doesn't interpret the result, execute it, and throw away the executed code. It interprets the dot class file and saves the result and then reuses that compilation, so it only interprets it once. So the just-in-time compilation is off about 50% in this example here from the best Fortran compiler on these machines. And it's quite interesting, if you run this applet here, which is downloaded in real time, you'll find the performance is 44 megaflops. If you go back to the first screen dump I did, which was back in May, the performance, the best machine is 1 megaflop. It's a digital alpha. If you go to September, the best machine is now a PC running at 13 megaflops. And now in February of 97, the best machine is still a PC, but it's running a 44 megaflop. So that shows you that over a time period of about 8 months, the performance of the Java interpreter on the dominant consumer market has increased by about a factor of 50. And that it's clearly superior to these fancy high-end machines, which do, of course, have much more powerful hardware and more expensive hardware. And the reason is, for our silicon graphics, has a compiler staff which is probably 10 times smaller than Netscape and Microsoft, which are aiming at the consumer market. And that illustrates again why Apple is going to have a difficulty, because they're going to have the same problem SGI has with their compilers. They're going to find it extremely difficult to build, either have other people build or for them to build software which is going to keep up with the power of the dominant consumer market. Alright. So anyway, this actually, of course, this benchmark, I think, illustrates rather nicely the power of the applet model. if you were able in real time to point out to our systems administrator what a lousy machine this is compared to the best available ones, and why you will all go back and ask for your quad PC, whatever the highest performance machine is, which you can read off from this link. It's actually, so this is the one from, whatever it is. This one is from, so this one is the one from, I think, May. And here, actually, here's my machine in my office in May. So my machine in my office looked pretty good. It was half the performance of the best machine. Now my machine in my office still runs at 0.5 megaflops, 0.54 megaflops, and the best machine is up at 44 megaflops, which is why my poor old machine, just like this machine, looks like a dot at the bottom of the curve, because SGI has not yet released a just-in-time compiler for this machine. They will, of course, and when SGI... There is, of course, no reason why a just-in-time compiler won't work excellently on an SGI machine. SGI will produce it, so, you know, some number of months from now, this graph will have a lot more equal, I mean, will have a lot of equal contributions, and presumably the SGI will actually outperform, or it will probably outperform the PC. At least the top-end SGI will, it better do. Otherwise, but that also, of course, illustrates, so this is the one for September, where it goes up to 13 megaflops. And let me skip this file. So maybe this is, let me just stop on this file here. So this is, of course, the other way you can get good performance, which is sort of a wrapper way, I don't think Nancy discussed it, but Java does have defined in it the concept of a so-called native class. So a native class is essentially your way of improving the Java runtime. When you implement Java on your, when you run your Java, it is using the so-called Java runtime that is almost certainly written in C or C++. And that's what Sunsoft or JavaSoft provides, or Netscape provides. Java has a predefined API interface to C code, and so you can take existing C code, link them to your Java code, and thereby get high performance on particular applications, such as, say, matrix arithmetic or existing code. So that is and that of course is a traditional way of getting good performance. You write libraries and use those. And if you use your browser, you will find that it has things called plugins. Now, what is a plugin? A plugin is a way of downloading C code, whereas a Java applet is a way of downloading Java code. So one way of implementing this is having a plugin where you put into that plugin your favorite C code, or Fortran, or what have you. So already the web has a mechanism for downloading non-applet mode code, and that's what you need for when you need high performance. So next time, I think I'll continue this general discussion. So the, I might start JavaScript. I guess I'll try to do some JavaScript, and I'll finish this FOIL set. Thank you.